Good afternoon. It's a distinct pleasure to be here, an honor, and I thank Dr. Brett Carver for invitation and opportunity to be here and share some thoughts about common bean improvement. Common bean, these are fasciolous beans. It's difficult to follow the Dr. Jim Speck and soybeans. Soybeans are introduced crop to this continent. Fasciolous beans, they are native to American continents, but yet they are orphan crop, specialty crop, unlike soybeans, so you may not know much about beans. So my talk is going to be divided into three parts. I'll give you a brief introduction about common bean, then strategies used, progress made, and the third part will be challenges that we are facing and future prospects. You can read faster there than myself, so I'm not going to read my slides. Fasciolous beans, these are five distinct species. Attractive as they are a lot better for your health. If you take daily or regular beans in your diet, include them, they will keep the doctors away. It's important for genetic improvement to understand how all these have evolved from their wild ancestors, what is their relationship, if we understand that, then we would also know where the useful genetic variation is located and how to use those useful genes. In case of the five cultivated species, common bean is by far the most important. Over 90% acreage in the world is grown under common bean. And wild beans, as well as cultivated, they form the primary gene pool. Runner bean, a year-long bean, that is Fasciolus polyanthus or Dumosus, they form together the secondary gene pool, which hybridizes with common bean without embryo rescue. Tapir bean, Fasciolus acutifolius, is in the tertiary gene pool, and there are some other species, but among the cultivated, that is alone. And lima bean, Fasciolus lunatus, is the quaternary gene pool, and that alone is by itself. In terms of adaptation, common beans, they are adapted from 52 degree north latitude to about 33 degree south latitude. And they have the widest range in terms of temperature and moisture availability. Runner bean and year-long bean, species of the secondary gene pool, they are adapted to the highlands of Mexico, Central America, and the Andes. Tapir bean, they are known for their drought tolerance, and also they carry extremely high level of resistance to common bacterial blight, which is not available in common bean. And lima bean, they are adapted to warm, humid tropics where Fasciolus or common bean cannot be grown. Now, in case of common bean, that would be my talk. It evolved from these wild ancestors, as you see, small seeded, to extreme large seeded. 100 seed of this wild bean weighs less than 15 grams. And these extremely large seeded, 100 seeds would weigh around 110, 115 grams. In terms of price, nobody would buy these wild beans, but these, they sell for about $20-$25 a kilo in Spain. All that change from wild to from this climbing to bring to this dwarf types. In this case, you are seeing a field in Argentina, which is about 25,000 acres. From climbing here on the bushes to be planted here, these are the dwarf bush types. All that change occurred over thousands of years, was brought about by people who did not have a formal training or degree in plant breeding and plant genetics. And within the last 100 years, we are trying to improve these domesticated types. In case of common bean, as you see, these climbing types, they grow about 4-5 meters tall. Type 3, these are indeterminate prostrate, indeterminate upright, determinate upright. Here the terminal inflorescence, like in corn, wheat, cereals, rice, is reproductive. So in case of, thinking a field, if seed size is the same for all these would yield about 3,000 kilos per hectare. Here these climbing types, they would yield about 6,000 kilos. So yield is related with growth habit. In terms of maturity, this might take about, these climbers would take about 150 days in the same climate, whereas these types could be harvested in 90 days. So the second factor that is associated with yield is maturity and growth habit. Common bean is grown in different cropping system. So the production problems and where and the environment they are grown also determines its productivity potential. Just in case of Brazil, in Northeast, you see beans are planted here with opuntia or cactus. You would not see soybeans to be grown under those conditions. Further down there from Pernambuco, Bahia to Alagoas, Sergipe, it is planted in a strip cropping system. Central Brazil, intercropped with corn. Southern and Brazil, mostly it is monoculture. So yield would also vary according to production system and production problems. Common bean, there are two major types. The snap bean or green bean or garden bean, and the dry beans. Dry beans are most important. About 15 million hectares is grown under dry beans. Less than 3 million hectares is grown under green beans. Both are very good in terms of these dry as well as green beans. They are good for human health. Beans are rich in protein, minerals, vitamins, and unavailable carbohydrate. They complement cereals and make a balanced food. Beans have low glycemic index and glycemic load, and they reduce the risk of chronic diseases such as obesity, diabetes type 2, cardiovascular diseases, and cancer. Tomorrow afternoon, at the same place, there will be a symposium organized by Dr. Brick, and you should participate in that one. Major events that have saved common bean improvement include the separation of fasciolus beans from Vigna, that is of Asiatic and African origin, understanding the immediate ancestors of common bean, gene pools, races, and other relatives. Massive work has been done in germplasm evaluation. There are about 30,000 accessions. Of that, about 20,000-25,000 have been evaluated for major characteristics. And from that, what we know is what traits are missing, what traits are characteristics or genes they are found in common bean, and for which and others for which we have to go to relatives and wild populations. Work has been also done in determining the genetics of qualitative and quantitative traits and different breeding methods. Also, within the last 10-15 years, linkage maps and molecular markers, especially for resistance to diseases, they are available. And a very strong collaboration between state, national, regional, and international programs, and collaborations between private and public breeders globally. Some observations about genetic improvement. Public breeding in the United States was initiated at the turn of 20th century. Michigan State was the first to hire a full-time breeder in 1906. There are genetic differences in terms of climatic adaptation and yield of different cultivars or belonging to different market classes, gene pools and races. There are developmental barriers and there are differences in combining ability between cultivars belonging to different gene pools and races. The US cultivars in general have a very narrow genetic base, and there has been unequal genetic improvement for the cultivars of different market classes. And it is our understanding that within the last 100 years, there has been a major emphasis in breeding for disease resistance, although it may not be considered directly associated with yield improvement. And it is a daunting challenge to simultaneously broaden the genetic base and breed beans for new adaptation to especially western northern environments, and improve yield, resistance to abiotic and biotic stresses, and seed quality. In case of common bean, cultivated common bean, genetic diversity is organized into those two gene pools. The Middle American on your left, these are in general small seeded, and Andean, which in general they are large seeded. What you have in these ones, we have divided into three races: Durango, starting from the north, semi-arid highlands of Mexico, humid highlands of Mexico, race Jalisco, and then tropical and subtropical, Central America, race Mesoamerica. Moving northwards is race Nueva Granada, which is coffee growing regions in Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, race Peru, highlands of Peru, Bolivia, Ecuador, above 2,000 meters, and further south is race Chile. As you see, the growth habit, although they are similar, maturity, days to maturity is similar, but yield potential here is 5,000 kilos per hectare, here 3,000 kilos per hectare. The same way, although yield potential is the same here for the climbers, but days to maturity, 150 days, whereas this would take about 270, 280 days to mature from planting. This one has all four growth habit types, and so the yield ranges from 3,000 kilos per hectare to 5,000 kilos per hectare. And in this case, irrespective of maturity, yield is about the same. So in general, beans of Middle American origin, they are more efficient physiologically compared to these types here. Now, worldwide, there's very little genetic improvement for cultivars belonging to race Chile, race Peru, and race Jalisco, and they have very limited adaptation. Most of the beans grown in North America, they belong to race Durango, some to race Mesoamerica, and very small proportion to race Nueva Granada. In case of Latin America, Mexico, race Durango, Central America, and South America, except the Andean highlands, they all belong to race Mesoamerica. Among this cream stripe, Carioca beans in Brazil, Bolivia, Argentina, and these black beans, they are the most widely grown from Canada to Argentina and Chile. So, and in the US, these navy beans and black beans, they are very popular. So, when we talk about breeding of one market class may not refer or reflect anything regarding the other market classes. So you have to be very specific when you refer to genetic improvement in terms of common bean. Looking at the three major types, we have here this data we generated about 15, 20 years ago, and it has been very useful. When we make intra-racial crosses, you can see heterosis over mid-parent, inbreeding depression, and these interracial crosses, especially when you have large-seeded beans, these offer a good source of germplasm to improve yield. Now we have used for Middle American this interracial cross between races Mesoamerica and Durango to improve yield. Now, in terms of breeding strategies, three major breeding strategies have been used globally. Breeding for resistance to diseases and insect pests has been successful in all continents and across all market classes. The second strategy has been changing the growth habit from determinate, low-yielding, short growing season to long growing season, indeterminate, upright type 2, especially in the United States. And the third has been broadening the genetic base and on the basis of combining ability and improving yield potential. And we will examine what impact it has made. I'll take example of Brazil, Central America, and United States. Now, just to remind our growers that breeding for disease resistance does improve yield. You can see there in Idaho, on both sides is a disease called bean common mosaic, which is really common all around the world. And there has been a massive effort since 1925 in Idaho to breed for resistance, and that's the difference that it makes. A resistant variety at least would grow normal, and you would realize the full potential of that one in absence of disease. Impact you can measure in terms of increased yield, reduced production cost, improved health, positive impact on the environment, and most importantly, the money that goes in pocket of the producers. Here at SIAT, as a team effort working with entomologists, pathologists, and myself, we developed the Carioca, which is the most important market class in Brazil. Usually it is type 3. We developed a type 2 with resistance to 5 diseases and leafhopper. And you can see it's at least significant, not whole lot, but being a type 2, changing from type 3, which is generally higher yielder than this one, we at least increased yield and combined resistance to 5 diseases and insect pests. Now what impact that has brought? This is a plant type of Carioca 801 that we developed. Similar materials were also developed in Brazil, where bean golden mosaic virus, bean common mosaic virus, angular leaf spot, anthracnose, common bacterial blight were major diseases. And you can see in 1980s, yield per hectare in Brazil was going down, and Brazil was importing a lot of beans. Now you can see further in 2008, yield in Brazil has doubled. That's a remarkable achievement compared to corn, rice, any other crop. You can see what it has done, just breeding for resistance to multiple diseases. It has been a massive effort on part of scientists at Embrapa National Center in Goiânia and state programs in cooperation with SIAT in Colombia. Same thing in Central America. The same diseases were major problems in Central America, and you can see there again, consistently, yield has increased. Per hectare yield has increased, and even acreage, especially in Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, acreage also has increased because the crop is more profitable. That's about 1% increase per year. The same thing in the United States. You can see that acreage planted has not changed a whole lot, but productivity potential has increased, and here again, it's about 1% increase per year. So it's not soybean, it's not corn, it's not rice, wheat. It's a specialty crop, orphan crop, but here again, we have made a major improvement. Now, using the second strategy, changing the growth habit from determinate to indeterminate cultivars, this has been practiced in the United States. The work was led at Michigan State University by Wayne Adams and Dr. Jim Kelly, and they have successfully converted the small white or navy beans from determinate type 1 to type 2. Here's data published in Michigan Dry Bean Digest under drought stress compared to determinate type 1, about 200 kilos difference per acre, per hectare. But under normal conditions, optimum conditions, no stress environment, it is five-fold, about 1,000 kilos per hectare improvement. And what it has done? In 1980s, 1990s, and recently, most cultivars from determinate, they have been put out of production, and you can see that yield has again increased about 34-35%. The third strategy, broadening the genetic base, has been successfully used in the United States as well as in other countries. And here I'm going to take example of pinto beans in particular. This is data that we generated in Idaho over 3 years, three environments. You can see variety released in 1944, 1965, 1987. Yield has improved from 44 variety released then. They were all grown in the same environments to one released in 1987. Pinto is by far the largest market class in the United States. And you can see nationally, the pinto bean yield from 1988 to 2008, it has increased 30%. Challenges that we face, hardly 5% of all available germplasm of common bean has been utilized. So there is a large amount of germplasm remains unutilized or underutilized. Still, it is a daunting challenge to improve yield within growth habit, within market class, within maturity class. Simultaneously improving multiple qualitative and quantitative traits, including yield, quality, resistance to biotic, abiotic stresses, is still a major challenge. Combining best of molecular marker techniques, especially marker assisted selection, with best of conventional techniques is a challenge for cultivar development. And integrating public and private breeding efforts to maximize production and competitiveness of our growers, producers globally is a challenge. Future prospects, we got to breed for total plant performance, and that is integrated genetic improvement, where we seek varieties which are high yielding, high quality, they are broadly adapted, and they have reduced production cost. And that can be obtained by breeding for resistance to diseases, insect pests, and also for water and nutrient use efficiency, tolerance to extreme temperature and day lengths, and cultivars have to be suitable for mechanization so that they require or they are less dependent on human labor. To achieve that, I have tried to briefly summarize that we got to use multiple parent crosses to use, make maximum use of germplasm in shortest time, and use gamete selection, that is selection starting from F1 in multiple parent crosses, especially for diseases, and insect pests using both direct and indirect selection techniques, and test F1 derived F2 to F5 families for tolerance or resistance to abiotic stresses, yield potential, and identify most promising populations and families within populations from which to derive breeding lines, and test those breeding lines over 3-4 years to identify the most promising, high-yielding, high-quality, and cultivars adapted to stresses and non-stresses. How we are doing that? You can see here a F1 plant in our greenhouse. I'm not a molecular biologist, but I'm too using marker-assisted selection. The same F1 plant is inoculated with rust, one primary leaf, the second primary leaf with bean common mosaic, the first trifoliolate leaf with common bacterial blight, and then the fourth or fifth node, internode, is inoculated with white mold, which is a major problem. So here are four diseases, and before inoculation, we take a leaf sample to carry out marker-assisted selection. The plants which are resistant, they are harvested separately, and the F1 derived F2 families, they are grown under low soil fertility. And you can see here our field at Kimberley, where you can select. You don't have to be a soil scientist to see that this is susceptible or less efficient in nutrient use, and this is more efficient. These are harvested in bulk. The following generation in F3, they are planted in this field as well as under drought, under soil compaction. This field has been under bean for 59 years continuously. And what is good in these three conditions, as well as under high input, is harvested and is put in replicated trial under weed competition in F4, as well as replicated trial in these three stress environments, as well as under normal unstressed condition. So that way, from replicated trial, we identify highest yielding families from which to develop breeding lines for testing and identification of new cultivars. So that is the approach I'm proposing, the approach that we are using in our program for last several years. Thank you, and if you have any questions, I'll try to address them.
We have a little time for questions, if anybody wants to offer one.
Yeah.
What does it look like?
I think you know more than myself. In our case, I mean, it has to be on individual basis. For example, at Kimberley, I was very lucky to be able to work very closely with Seminis vegetable seeds. We used to use their greenhouse for screening for diseases, for which we had no permission or permit to work, like anthracnose, halo blight, rust. And we used to provide our field, for example, for low soil fertility, to screen their germplasm. The same way with some other private group, I mean, we are breeding, doing part of the work ourselves. In return, they do part of testing for our program. So on a small basis, individual basis, it works. But on a national basis, how it is going to work with Monsanto, how it is going to work with ADM or something, I honestly don't know. But like in case of drive-ins, for example, ADM people, they are analyzing data from our national and regional trials. And we have national nursery in which both private and public breeders, they are able to test their varieties. But in the breeding phase, it might be difficult to, see it on a national basis.
Okay, thank you very much, Ray. Appreciate it.